or against his father on the horizon. A chasm had opened in my heart, and I felt like I was drowning inside of it. The carriage slowed to a halt, shaking me from my longing and Mari from her sleep. The sun had gone down, and we pulled off in front of a strange, lopsided inn with a thatched roof.
"Where are we?" I called out of the window.
"Serpent Spring, and keep your voices down," Griffin said before tying up his horse and heading inside.
"He is so bossy," Mari said, shaking out her red curls. Sleep had set them askew, and she looked like a frayed edge.
"Hand me my books, and that cloak. Come on, hurry up," she added, as she climbed outside into the dull evening heat.
I rolled my eyes. The inn was sweltering and disconcertingly empty. Griffin, Mari, and I ate a late supper at a rickety wooden table. We were alone, save for a snoring older man with a handlebar mustache and two rowdy local boys well into their fifth drinks of the night.
"In this one, I found a few mentions of Fae society, but nothing about a power source," Mari continued, poring over the leather-bound tome on the table beside her stew.
She was over the moon about the new insight into the history of the Fae and had spent all subsequent waking hours on the journey thus far researching.
"Quieter, please." Griffin's jaw tightened as he rubbed at his temples. He was not a fan of Mari's, it seemed. Even less so when, after needing his expertise on a few Fae-related questions, we had admitted to him that she knew about Lazarus and the Fae realm. I wondered if he resented babysitting the object of his king's affection and her friend when a battle such as this one was brewing.
I know, the whole concept of a book is so hard for you," Mari said.
"These are words," she enunciated slowly before turning back to me. I covered my laugh with a bite of potato.
"All I'm asking for is discretion. You weren't supposed to know any of this."
Griffin shot a pointed look in my direction.
"And you never know who could be listening."
Mari nodded in a fake display of sincerity, her brown eyes big and innocent.
"You're right. I think Sleepy behind us is working for the enemy. Good eye, Commander."
Griffin stared down at his stew, possibly contemplating all of his life choices. I shot him my best, "Thank you for bringing her along," smile. He got up from the table, leaving his dinner behind.
"Mar, why do you antagonize him?"
Mari looked back at her book while she shoveled a spoonful into her mouth.
"I don't mean to."
I glared at her. "Anyways," she continued, lowering her voice, "I'm not sure why light is what interests you the most out of what Kane told you. There's nothing in here about it."
"Damn. That's the whole issue. Even if by some unlikely odds we defeat this king, which I don't see happening."
I shot her another glare.
"Sorry," she added.
"Even if we did, there are tens of thousands of mortals and fae living in a hellscape realm. It isn't right. And we can't save their lands or bring them here without learning more about light." I pushed my plate away from me. My stomach had soured, and suddenly nothing sounded worse than the starchy, grainy mush. Mari eyed me suspiciously.
"Since when do you care so much about a realm you only learned of 5 days ago?"
I couldn't really answer her. I wasn't sure. The feeling of helplessness was an all too familiar one. One I had experienced every day of my life until I came to Onyx. But I had learned to live without my family, to sword fight, to be bold. I had survived an attack from a Fae mercenary. And now Kane was leaning on me, counting on me. He had called it relentless positivity, but despite all the helplessness, there was another feeling blossoming inside of me. And maybe it was hope. The patchwork blanket was rough against my skin, and the bed smelled of mothballs and sour laundry. I turned to my other side to see if somehow that configuration would be more comfortable. It wasn't. The pillow was hot against my cheek no matter which way I flipped it, and the stagnant air of the inn was suffocating me. I threw on my boots and made my way down the stairs before I knew where I was going.
Outside, the cool air was like a caress against my face. I took a deep inhale of obsidian wheat and cut grass. I had fallen a bit in love with the rough onyx land. Lemongrass, lilac, lavender. The sticky, sweet fragrances of my childhood town now felt cloying in comparison. I poured water from the inn's well into my cupped palms and splashed my face. The sound of metal on metal surprised me, and I turned to see two men fighting in the distance. When one called out for mercy, my legs began moving of their own accord. It wasn't yet morning, so I rubbed my eyes and squinted into the dim light, looking for some kind of weapon to stop them. All I saw was a long piece of wood. That would have to do. I ran toward the men, preparing to break up the fight with a branch, when I heard a deep peal of male laughter. The exhale that puffed out of me was almost comical. Griffin was shirtless and dripping sweat. His blonde hair was matted to his forehead. Across from him, a mop-headed young soldier we had been traveling with lunged. Griffin parried the overhead blow with ease, then clocked him in the head with his pommel.
Ouch!
Less talking, more focus on your distance. You're getting too close, said Griffin. His eyebrows perked up when he saw me. Morning, healer. Griffin ducked under the next attack and hit the boy in the stomach with his other hand. If I had my dagger, Rolf, you'd be dead. Rolf dropped his sword and flopped down on a nearby bale of hay. All right, I'm dead. What kind of attitude is that? Griffin asked, but Rolf had already stalked back toward the well, surely for water and to tend to his bruised ego. You could go a little easier on him, I said, picking up his discarded weapon. And then what would he learn? I turned the sword over in my hands. You could be a little easier on Mari, too. Griffin's playful energy shifted. Did she say that? That I was hard on her? I shook my head. No, I'm saying that. Griffin hummed a non-answer. I had missed the feeling of steel in my hands, the power I felt when I wielded a sword. Care for a wager? Griffin raised a sweating brow at me. You've been spending too much time with our king, he said. Then after a moment, try me. If I can land a single blow on you, even one, you have to say something kind to Mari, a genuine compliment. Griffin rolled his eyes. What are we, school children? I grinned. Fine. If you can't, though, what do I get? I thought for a beat. Griffin, I don't think I know anything about you. What would you want? A silent dinner tonight? If I have to play sitter for you two until we reach Siren's Cove, at least make it tolerable. You're terrible. And boring. Now it was Griffin's turn to grin. It's the little things. Before I could respond, he came at me, sword flying. I parried as many blows as I could, but a few hits landed on my arms, abdomen, and back. Griffin had experienced teaching, it seemed. As each blow was harnessed with such skill, it would hurtle toward me with speed, but land with nothing more than a sting. Griffin's style was much faster and scrappier than Doggins. He tossed his sword from right hand to left and jumped over my attempted low blows. 10 minutes later, my legs could barely keep me standing up. All right, I panted. Enough. Griffin shot me an infuriating grin. I blew the hair out of my face like an aggravated horse. Griffin laughed. Don't be too glum. You're much better than I expected. The old man taught you well. Did Cain tell you? Griffin nodded, but behind his eyes was something I couldn't place. Get cleaned up. We head out in an hour. I huffed. So much for strong, powerful, fae-slaying Arwen. You could be decent, with a bit more practice. Let me know if you want to keep working on it. I paused. I thought you hated me. Griffin's expression barely changed, but his eyes had grown solemn. No, healer, I don't hate you. He heaved a sigh and sat down on the bale of hay beside me. The sun was just beginning to rise, and the flickers of light picked up golden strands in his hair. A thought dawned on me, something I had been wondering for months now. Why did you chase after Kane that day in the infirmary? He wasn't really an escaped prisoner. A rueful smile tugged at the commander's cheeks. It was still strange to see him grin.
He needed to be healed, but didn't want to tell you who he was just yet. We argued about it.
Griffin's jaw tightened at the memory.
He gave me the slip.
A laugh popped out of me. You chased him down?
Griffin's grin was gone, though.
My job is to protect my king. You are... He scratched at his chin, trying to find the words.
Dangerous for him.
I scoffed.
Right.
The great Cain Ravenwood taken down by Arwen from Abington. Terrifying.
Griffin stood. It is no laughing matter. He cannot have a single weakness when he goes up against Lazarus, and yet, you are his. Nothing could be more perilous for Evendell.
That night, after yet another suffocating carriage ride, we sat down at a different little inn. This one was owned by a sweet, plump family and smelled strongly of pork. Dinner was an awkward event, while the rest of the guards we traveled with sat around the inn's dormant hearth. It was far too warm for even a single flame. Drinking ale and telling stories, the three of us sat in aggressive silence, picking at our food. Mari was displeased, to say the least, about my silent dinner bargain. I had to sway her with the promise of 3 new books when we arrived in Peridot. The silence was deafening, but the looks between my 2 dinner guests were even worse. Mari glared at Griffin with the fury of a soaked cat. Griffin was the embodiment of smug calm, which only made Mari angrier. The minutes ticked by torturously. I ate as quickly as I could. Mari stared at Griffin until her anger seemed to slip into something else altogether. Her eyes shifted, and his peace turned into suspicion. I didn't dare ask what was going on. Suddenly, Mari turned bright red and looked down at her food. It seemed the poorly cooked pork had become very fascinating in the last minute. I looked from my pork to hers, but didn't see anything of note. I peered back up at Griffin. He was watching Mari's averted chocolate eyes with something like remorse. He cleared his throat.
Your hair is radiant, like sunshine after a storm.
Mari's mouth fell open, and Griffin stood up abruptly, his 2 long legs banging the table and making the cutlery jump. He left the table early for the 2nd night in a row. What was that? I asked her. She looked even more shocked than I did. I have no idea, Mari said, for the first time since I'd known her. Maybe in her life. She ran an idle finger through her curls and went back to her dinner. 25. I knew we had reached the coast before I even opened my eyes. A salty breeze wafted in through our carriage window, and the temperature dropped about 20 degrees. Oh, thank the stones, I mumbled, my mouth still thick with sleep.
Arwen, get up!
Mari's voice sounded far away. I cracked one eye open to see her pressed against the carriage side, head out the window, eyes squinting against the bright sun.
It's so beautiful, she said.
I couldn't help a smile before I squeezed in beside her. My heart shone in my chest at the sight, matching the bright sun outside. Peridot was lusher and more breathtaking than anything I could have imagined. Once again, the weight of how little of Evendell I had experienced hit me like a gut punch. The castle that sprawled before us atop the highest hill was like a ranch. Bamboo beams, a large thatched gate, and miles of exotic, textured land spread in every direction. The smell of saltwater and plumeria filtered in as I spied cows, horses, and goats. Bright green hills rolled beyond the castle gates, like waves in a sea, all dotted with tropical flowers. I'd have to look into their names now, too. The city itself stretched beyond the fortress, weaving into the trees and hills and growing denser until I had to squint to make it out, as if Siren's Cove was protected by its king's stronghold, rather than the other way around. From what I could see, the city was more like my hometown of Abington than what I imagined a bustling capital to be. Smoke billowed out of straw roofs. Chickens and more horses squawked and neighed. Families and children and women balancing buckets and baskets milled about. But the most jaw-dropping view was much closer, out the carriage and to my right. A few miles down from the royal home was the beach. The docks in Abington were, at best, a murky, fishy hub for driftwood and pelicans. Boats and ships of all shapes and sizes crowded the harbor, and fishermen with few teeth took up whatever space was left. My siblings and I would walk 40 minutes down to take a frigid dip, wandering back at dusk against the shimmering sun melting into the marina, our legs sore and tanned and reeking of brine and trout. This was something else entirely. The crescent-shaped cove, sheltered by low stone cliffs, was filled with emerald waves rocking against a beach of soft pink sand. A thick rainforest grew beyond the cliffs, filled with spiked trees I had never seen before. A cool breeze mixed with humid air tickled my skin. I wanted to take a bite out of the atmosphere. "Come on," said Mari, pulling me out of the carriage as soon as it halted. We followed the soldiers toward the castle gates. I was less pleased to see Princess Amelia than I had anticipated. Her white blonde hair cascaded over her loose clothing. A single beige band of fabric covered her chest, but showed off the taut, tan skin of her belly. A skirt of the same breezy material flowed from low on her hips down to the ground. She had an incredible body, and the sheer fabric made sure anyone in a 5-mile radius knew it. Somewhere between watching her flirt her way into an alliance with an old flame and feeling Kane's tongue in my mouth, I had decided she was my nemesis. Or perhaps something slightly less dramatic, but only slightly. Next to her stood her father, King Eric's. He had the same pale hair and eyes of bright, warm amber, like sunflowers, just like his daughter's.
"Welcome, Commander Griffin," Eric's boomed.
Griffin bowed, and the rest of us followed suit. "Commander." Amelia greeted Griffin warmly. He bowed once more, taking her hand and kissing it. Eric's looked rather pleased at the interaction.
"Still waiting to take a wife, my dear Commander."
Amelia rolled her eyes with enough venom that even I cowered. But Griffin, cool as ever, didn't even blush.
"I have my hands a little full with our current circumstances, Your Majesty."
Eric's gave a warm smile and a sly laugh.
"Understood. I think I speak for all when I say we are grateful for your dedication. Once we have defeated the Amber Bastards, I assure you my lovely Amelia will still be here, waiting, as always."
I nearly went cross-eyed with the urge to roll my eyes. I didn't particularly care for Amelia, but I didn't like her father offering her up like cattle either.
"She may be tricky, but I wager the title of Prince of Peridot sweetens the pot."
His wet cackle turned into a cough, and Griffin's bland smile never met his eyes. I spotted Mari out of the corner of my eye with a pinched look on her face, without any more pleasantries, if that's what we could call Eric's tactless offering. We were ushered inside the airy palace, and Griffin followed Eric's into another hallway. The princess acknowledged neither Mari nor I at all before disappearing.
"She's annoying, right?" Mari said under her breath.
"You have no idea." We were each shown to our own room for the open-ended duration of our stay. I couldn't help my theatrical gawk at the warm expanse of teakwood floors and the canopied bed upon entering. The breeze from the huge windows overlooking the glimmering turquoise bay flitted through my hair. A single exotic bird with wings of bright scarlet perched on the windowsill. I stretched out against the soft, white cotton bedsheets and hummed in relief.
No more inns, no more sweltering heat. Maybe I'd finally get a good night's sleep. But I couldn't rest yet. I'd promised Mari 3 books, and I intended to keep said promise. Plus, I was excited to see the Peridot Library. Shadowhold's library was exquisite, and that was just an army stronghold. This was a palace in the Peridot capital of Siren's Cove. Maybe their library was in a lagoon. I made my way through the castle. Every inch was adorned with either vines, cushions, or delicate beadwork. I asked one of the servants, who was dusting a canvas chaise, for directions to the library. It was strange, having been a villager in a small town my whole life, then a prisoner just a few months ago, and now a guest of royalty. The sound of the waves crashing in Siren's Bay followed me everywhere I went, like a welcome lullaby. I pushed open the bamboo doors to the library and passed a few shirtless Peridot soldiers clad in armored pants and helmets. Their torsos and forearms were covered in intricately patterned tattoos that matched their long spears. The library was simple, filled with colorful books and scrolls, and had a warm hearth at the center of the room surrounded by white cushions. But the cozy fireplace and its few huddled readers weren't the room's highlight. It was the sprawling balcony that looked out onto the pristine bay. Calm, crystalline waters washed over the shore. To the left were at least 15 massive ships with the green Peridot symbol imprinted on their sails. The sun hung low in the sky, reflecting off the waves in sparkling rays. I didn't know how I had gone 20 years without seeing an ocean like this, or how I would ever go another day without it again. Glittering sunshine, colors and textures and waves, I could barely believe it was real. Something about being at the edge of the continent felt at once both freeing and completely frightening. Frightening, and yet my all-too-familiar panic was nowhere to be found. Pulling myself away from the view was like untangling a vine from its post. I finally made my way over to the section marked Lore and pulled 3 books, one on fey mythology, one grimoire, and one about various types of hybrid creatures and their diets. I knew my girl. Plus, after everything Kane had told me, I wanted to learn more about the fairies as well. If he was somehow to beat his father, he needed all the information he could get. I tried not to think about the odds of him defeating the last living, full-blooded fae when he had lost so terribly a mere 50 years ago. On my way out, I doubled back to the section marked Horticulture and grabbed a book entitled Evendel Flora by Kingdom. That one was just for me. I dropped the books outside Mari's room, remembering that she was going to nap before dinner, and returned to my room. A knock at my door had me back up before I had even crawled fully under the silken sheets for a nap of my own. Come in. Princess Amelia strolled inside and sat down on the bed. I scrambled to politely sit beside her, then tried to bow. It wasn't pretty. She gave me a pitying glance. No need for whatever that is. I brought you clothes for tonight's dinner. She handed me a similar dress to what she was wearing. Very sheer, pale blue fabric. It looked like it wouldn't cover much of anything. The tragically dark and heavy clothes of onyx won't suit you here. Thank you, Your Highness, I said. I have to ask, does the princess always hand deliver clothing to her guests? I wasn't sure what made me so snarky. I didn't trust this woman. I trusted her even less when she was being kind to me. She offered a prim smile that didn't reach her eyes. I know you think I am your enemy, Arwen, that I am trying to bed your king or take him from you, or whatever little problems you concern yourself with. It could not be further from the truth. In fact, I want to offer you some advice, woman to woman. Like a child being scolded, I stared down at my interwoven fingers. I didn't dare bring up that I knew she had already bedded the king many times. I wasn't sure who that discussion would be more unpleasant for, her or me.
She dipped an elongated finger adorned with jewels under my chin and tilted my face up to hers.
Cain Ravenwood has not been wholly truthful with you.
I blinked twice.
I urge you not to lead with your heart, she continued, but rather with your mind and spirit. You seem a bright young woman. Do not be easily fooled by his allure.
Before I could tell her, I was more privy to his secrets than she thought. She got up and left the room, gently closing the door behind her. I clamped my lips together as irritation flickered inside me. She couldn't have been more wrong. Up until a few days ago, I would have agreed wholeheartedly. But he had finally let me in, shared his darkest secrets with me, as I had with him. Maybe Amelia was jealous, or maybe she was genuinely trying to help. Either way, it didn't matter. I had no idea when or if I would see him again, and as long as we were apart, I wouldn't let my faith in him waver.
I looked at the slips of fabric the princess had referred to as clothing. I wasn't as slender as she was, and wasn't eager to have so much of my body on display. I undressed completely and slipped the blue fabric on. The wisps of shimmering sheerness looped around my neck and waist at a low angle, leaving my midriff exposed before pooling on the floor like melted cream. It was less fabric than I had ever worn outside of my own bedroom. I looked in the mirror, anticipating mortification, but felt a surge of power waft over me in its place. I actually looked quite lovely. I tucked my hair up atop my head and secured it with a black ribbon. You could take the girl out of Onyx, but you couldn't take Onyx out of the... My door creaked open, and I turned, expecting Mari or Amelia once more. Instead, I came face to face with a dazed Cain.
Fuck, he grunted.
I was so shocked to see him, I was even less eloquent. Huh? Cain cleared his throat.
Hello, he said, flushing. You look so, very... Hello.
His brows knitted inward, as if even he didn't know what was coming out of his mouth. He was here, in Peridot, alive and happy to see me. I felt my cheeks warm. Very hello to you, too. I pulled him through the doorway and into my room, lifting on my toes to press a single kiss against his cheek. He had shaved, and his smooth jaw was hot under my lips. When did you arrive? I asked, not recognizing the rasp in my voice. His hands grasped my hips firmly, but he held me at a distance.
Moments ago. I need to show you something.
My face fell. Right now? Cain looked like he could break solid rock with his teeth.
If you can believe it, yes.
He grasped my hand and pulled me down the wooden stairs into the great hall. The room smelled of freshly grilled fish and citrus fruit. My stomach rumbled. We were surrounded by Peridot nobles and commanders, and I thought absently that I should probably let go of the king's hand. But then I saw them, and all other thoughts disappeared from my mind. 26. Only slightly worse for wear, and in garnet clothes I couldn't have imagined any of them wearing, were my family. My mother, Lee, and Ryder were seated at a wooden table with Griffin and Mari, laughing and eating. My face crumpled, and I couldn't control the tears that spilled down. I ran to them, throwing myself at Lee first.
What the?
But when she realized it was me, she squealed. Her little arms wrapping around me only made me cry harder. Later, I would take the time to inspect every finger and every toe and prove to myself that she was really all right.
I missed you so much, and I love you, but I can't breathe.
I released her, but only to get a good look at her face. She was thinner than when I last saw her, but she was beaming at me, and her expression lit up her sunken cheeks. I looked to Ryder next, as he hustled over and scooped me into his arms. When he let me go, he appraised my sheer outfit with a grimace.
You look deranged.
I laughed through my blurry eyes and held him tighter.
Thank you. I pulled back but kept my voice low. You kept them safe.
Of course I did. What did you do?
It's a very long story. Then I made my way over to my mother. She didn't look quite as good as Lee and Ryder. The months had aged her, and she seemed frail and tired. I crouched down and held her in my arms.
I can't believe it. I thought I might never see you again, she breathed.
My heart rose in my chest, like the sun after a storm, bright and shining and clear. I held her even tighter.
I know, I said. I'm so sorry.
We stayed like that for I don't know how long. When my back began to ache, I let go and took a seat at the table. I searched for Kane, only to find him stalking out of the hall with Amelia and Eric's. I ran after them, joy and disbelief making me bold.
Hey, wait!
I caught up to him and yanked on his shirt, wiping my eyes with my other hand.
Where are you going?
Amelia gazed at me with cynical interest next to her father, but I couldn't be bothered. Not tonight. Not when Kane was looking at me with such affection, my cheeks began to hurt from all the smiling.
I thought you might want to be alone with them. I have some things to do here before I leave.
We do have a war to strategize on, Lady Arwen, Amelia said, condescension dripping from her voice and even, stony features.
Oh, of course. I turned back to Kane. Thank you. I'll never be able to say it enough for reuniting us.
I told you I would, he said, eyes shining.
How did you get here so quickly, from Garnet? His head cocked to the side, as if he was preparing to answer my question with another question.
Dragon? I asked, as if it was completely normal to me. He smiled a bit. Yes. Then, leaning away from our hosts, I'm not sure who was more thrilled, your mother or the little one.
And Ryder?
I think he vomited.
I loosed a too loud laugh, and Kane's eyes crinkled at my joy. When do you leave? I asked. He shifted back toward Eric's.
Tomorrow morning.
Right, I said. Well, even busy kings who are waging wars have to eat. Want to join us? Would probably be the shock of my mother's life. I grinned up at him. His usual wolf-like charm was gone tonight, but he didn't seem sad either. Maybe resigned, which made sense. I understood the severity of the situation, but nothing could take the joy of seeing my family away from me right now. He glanced at Amelia and Eric's, their faces twin masks of irritation. Then his eyes flitted over to the candlelit table that held my family, Mari, and his commander.
Sure, he said.
Dinner was fascinating. I had given my mother the burrow root concoction I brewed on our journey here, and while she wasn't thrilled with the taste, her face had brightened just over the course of our dinner. Despite my family's initial unease at the Dark King's presence, Kane was on his best behavior, and they softened to him one by one. Lee first, of course, the girl was gutsy. Then Mother, who had many questions for Kane.
What does it feel like to carry the burden of a kingdom on your lone shoulders? Do the deaths you have caused weigh on you daily?
Not quite leisurely dinnertime conversation. I tried to convey my displeasure through relentless eye contact. At least her approach was better than Ryder's. He had watched us return to the table with a strange look in his eye and hadn't let up since we sat down. He interrupted my mother's next question for Kane with one of his own.
So, King Ravenwood, he asked, bread roll in hand, how did you end up befriending my sister?
I shot him a dirty glare. I did not care for the emphasis he put on befriending. Kane gave him that signature wolfish grin. I turned about 8 shades of red in anticipation.
She offered to be the healer in my keep in return for the coin you stole. You might owe her your thanks.
Now it was Ryder's turn to redden.
Your Majesty, it was a simple life-or-death scenario. You would have done the same for your family, would you not?
I have no family, so I wouldn't know, Kane said offhandedly.
A twinge of sadness echoed in my heart at his words. He must have seen my facial expression as he added,
But I'll take your word for it.
Bleeding stones, Ryder muttered under his breath, shrinking away.
Language, Mother hissed at him.
I couldn't help my smile. I had even missed her ridiculous prudishness. Mari, too, had lots of questions, mostly about Abington and what misconceptions people had about Onyx. Lee loved her immediately. The two of them were like two halves of a comedy act, finishing each other's sentences and laughing maniacally at things nobody else at the table found funny.
That actually brings me to another thought, Mari said to my mother. What was the...
You're making the woman choke on her swordfish. Let her eat in peace.
Griffin's tone was pleasant enough, but Mari shot him a withering glare.
I'm so sorry, Commander. I forgot how good you are at making conversation.
Do you want to compliment her hair? Asked Mari. A laugh spasmed out of me, and I almost spewed papaya all over the table. I grabbed Kane's arm beside me in between fits of giggles. Kane bit down a laugh at my hysterics. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Ryder quirk a brow at the moment between us. I quickly extricated my hand from the king's sleeve.
Don't worry about it, Red. I think she likes being interviewed.
Don't you, ma'am? Said Ryder. My mother smiled and started to speak, but Griffin interrupted.
I don't know, Red. I think the kid's just being kind.
Mari scoffed and Ryder grinned at Griffin, but it didn't reach his eyes.
If I'm a kid, what does that make you, Commander?
A man, Griffin said into his food, already bored by the exchange.
Could have fooled me, Ryder chirped, sending Mari and me into another fit of laughter.
I looked to my left and saw Kane and Lee deep in conversation. She was explaining something to him with animated expressions and complex hand gestures. Kane, to his credit, was following intently, chin resting on his fist and nodding along to her story. I took in this strange group before me and felt as though my heart might burst. It was better than I could ever have imagined, having all of them together. When dinner ended and we were all full to the brim, rum and carbs coating our stomachs, I rounded to my mother's chair to help her stand. To my disbelief, she stood up easily.
Mother,
I said, not even trying to hide my shock. She moved slowly at first, then found her footing and walked like she used to. Slow but deliberate, elegant even. Lee and Ryder watched with awe. I felt more tears prick at my eyes. Tonight had to be some kind of happy crying record.
Arwen, I don't have words.
Me neither. How do you feel?
Better. My mind feels less foggy.
So it wasn't the fever talking, Kane said.
I whipped to him behind me, his eyes like stars.
No,
I whispered. What I had done in the woods that night was unbelievably stupid, but nothing could have been more worth it than the look on my mother's face tonight.
What's he talking about?
My mother asked, brow raised.
Nothing. Let me walk you to your room for the night.
I turned to Kane, but he read my thoughts.
I'll come see you before I leave. Enjoy your family tonight.
I nodded in thanks.
Halfway up the stairs, my mother turned to me. So, you're sleeping with a king. That's new.
Mother,
I gasped, but I was unable to hide my grin. She laughed.
I'm only teasing, but he is clearly very, very fond of you.
I felt the familiar tug in my heart. We are absolutely doing nothing of the sort. I linked her arm in mine as we rounded the torchlit hall. But I'm fond of him, too. He has been kind to me since I've been at Onyx. Despite everything going on, everything at stake. Well, I thought better of my phrasing. His version of kind. My mother clucked, patting my hand.
He seems very thoughtful under all those layers of brooding,
Now it was my turn to laugh. Cain would love that.
It wasn't an easy few months, but there were a few silver linings. You would adore the flowers in the Shadowhold Gardens. They are the strangest colors I have ever seen.
She gave me a half smile before going still just a few steps from her room.
Arwen, when Ryder went back for you and saw the blood, we thought the worst. I could scarcely sleep knowing we had let you turn back.
She took my hand into hers.
But I am so, so proud of you, Arwen.
I squeezed her hand tightly, my brows knitting inward.
What for?
When the king found us in Garnet, he told us what you did for Ryder, for all of us, how many you had healed in the Onyx Kingdom outpost. I had no idea where you had gone, if you were still alive. But part of me knew all along you would be just fine on your own, that maybe it was necessary. I fear I sheltered you too much. I just know how dark a place this world can be. My thoughts flashed to Bert, the wolf beast, Halden's lies. I'm grateful. Had I known what was out there, I might never have given myself the chance to be brave.
My mother shook her head and pulled me into her arms. I'm so lucky to have you as my daughter. The world is a better place seen through your eyes. It felt like home, resting my head against her shoulder and feeling her soothing hands on my back.
If anything, I get it from you, I mumbled into her.
My kind girl, don't let anyone take that from you, the shining light you have within. I nodded into the crook between her neck and shoulder, the nighttime buzzing of crickets and cicadas like a cocoon for our embrace. With everything that was unfolding, understanding I would likely not see Cain again for months, if not years, the brewing conflict with the Fae King, I hadn't realized how much I just needed my mother. I never wanted to let go. She squeezed me harder and said,
I think tomorrow I'm going to swim in the bay. What do you think of that?
A single tear slipped down my cheek onto her dress.
I think that sounds wonderful.
I'll join you.
27. I waited up until I couldn't keep my heavy eyes open a moment longer. The candles I lit for Cain's visit had long since puddled, swallowing their wicks whole and drowning the room in shades of blue and black. I had hoped Cain would come see me before he left in the morning, but he hadn't yet. And I steeled myself against the nagging hurt. I wasn't a child. He was a king heading into a greater war than I had ever known, and the worst was yet to come. He had more important things to do than say goodbye to his. To me. I wasn't sure what I was to him. We definitely weren't lovers, but we were more than friends. I slipped into my nightdress and crawled under the covers. Sleep was a welcome drug, pulling me under a fog of rest and away from emotionally complicated thoughts. I woke to the familiar smell of woody fur, and surprise gave way to warmth, unfurling inside me as I buried my face in Cain's chest. He was here, in my bed. I nuzzled even closer. We had never really cuddled before, except maybe when I was dying. Which, of what I could recall, wasn't all that romantic. I took a moment to enjoy his strong hands around my back, pressing me to him.
You feel good, I murmured.
He hummed his response against my ear and ran a gentle hand down my back. My nipples pebbled at his touch, my breasts becoming tight and full against the silky fabric of my nightdress. When his finger brushed my tailbone, I shivered, and a dark chuckle rumbled from his chest. I pulled back slightly and looked up at him. His body felt languid against mine, but he was breathing as heavily as I was, desire filling his eyes like endless pools.
I thought you weren't coming, I said.
I wouldn't have missed this for anything.
He brushed a few hairs away from my face,
and ran his hand up my bare thigh, his touch rough and warm and setting me on fire. I wanted to devour him, to feel him everywhere. I had wanted this for so, so long. Every minute we were both still fully clothed was a tragedy. And his extraordinary gentleness was killing me. My eyes focused on his full lips, and I parted mine, breathless. He leaned in as his hand ran lazily up and down my thigh, pushing my nightdress up ever so slightly. His mouth was close, so close. But when his fingers grazed my hip bone, he pulled back, jaw rigid and pupils flaring.
"What is it?"
I breathed.
"You're not wearing anything under your nightdress."
I flushed, my face somehow going hotter than it already was.
"No."
"Why not?"
A laugh slipped out at his confusion.
"I don't usually sleep in them. I don't know. I can put some on."
He barked out one dark, cruel laugh and then rolled onto his back with a deep, pained sigh and a forearm draped across his eyes.
"Are you all right?"
I asked, breathless and confused by the shift in his energy.
"Not by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I'm losing my mind a bit."
I slunk closer to him, my breathing still uneven, and planted a single soft kiss on his warm neck. Balsam and leather filled my senses, and I released a soft hum against his skin. A groan, guttural and raw, fell from him, and he stood, climbing off the bed altogether. I sat up, raising an eyebrow in silent question.
"Do you really not want this?"
I asked, slightly sheepish.
"You know I do," he said through clenched teeth. "More than I've ever wanted anything."
"So you wouldn't prefer I sleep with someone else?" I was only kidding, but he stalked closer, eyes blazing. He looked like he wanted to crush mountains. I bit my tongue.
"Arwen, you aren't—"
He fought for the words, though they looked like they physically pained him to say.
"You aren't mine. You don't belong to me. You can spend your time with whoever you please. All I hope is that they treat you with the respect you deserve, and I will try every single day not to think of ripping out their still-beating hearts."
I tried to hide my smile. I loved imagining Cain jealous. It was twisted, but his barely contained fury sent a thrill through me. Silly King, as if there could be anyone else. "Have you ever thought about it?"
He raised a brow. "Of you with another man? I'd rather gouge my eyes out."
I laughed out loud. "No, of what it would be like between us."
"Ah, of course."
His voice had dropped to a low growl. It was the most profoundly erotic sound I'd ever heard. He stalked closer to me.
"Ever since that day we rode back from the woods together, I have thought of little else. Each night I rub myself raw thinking of your long legs, perfect breasts, and gorgeous laugh."
He lifted one single strand of my hair and rubbed it between his fingers.
"I imagine you on top of me and come apart faster than I care to admit."
I was panting now, resisting the urge to bring my hand between my legs and release the tension building up inside me. He must have read the wanton desire in my eyes, because he sighed, thick and heavy, released my hair from his fingertips, and paced over to the chair across the room. He looked miserable and so tired.
"Arwen, I came to say goodbye."
He said it like he was convincing himself, not me.
"I know."
"And that,"
he gestured to the bed behind me,
"would not be a very fair goodbye."
I huffed, crossing my arms. "Don't be so condescending. I'm an adult woman. I can make those decisions for myself." He paused, running a hand through his hair.
"I meant for me. I'm a selfish bastard, remember? Having you and then leaving you. It would kill me."
"Oh," I said, a little dumbly.
Maybe it doesn't have to be goodbye.
Our deal is done. You're safe now. You have your family. Your mother is healing. It's all I could have hoped for you. I can give you enough coin to live a long and healthy life with them here. All I would do is put you in danger.
I knew he was right. My family and I could have a real life here in Siren's Cove, a happy one. I could picture it in my mind with perfect clarity. Lee's chickens and cows, mother, finally healthy, cooking and dancing in the kitchen like she used to. Ryder would continue his woodwork. I would still heal, but maybe I'd open a tropical flower shop too one day. Maybe Kane would visit every few years. We could share nights just like these, tangled together under clandestine moonlight until he left before sunrise, his kingdom calling him back. Until one day, I built a life with someone new, someone else. How could I want more than that? More than safety for myself and my family? But I did. I wanted him, all of him, all the time, preferably forever. The reality of my feelings for him hit me with the force of a tidal wave, nearly knocking the wind out of me. Our deal, I repeated his words. Why did you have me stay? It wasn't just to heal your soldiers or pay off a debt. Was it just to keep me around? Kane rubbed his eyes.
Doesn't matter now.
He stood to leave. I felt a wave of unrelenting panic. Was this the last moment I was ever going to have with him? It couldn't end like this. I rose from the bed and raced to stand in front of him before he reached the door, my heart thundering in my ears. Don't leave, I whispered. His eyes were punishing. Arwen, we can't. But he made no move to push past me, so I stood on my tiptoes and took his face in my hands, gently. I know you said I'm not yours, but I want to be. I swallowed hard. I want to be yours, Kane. His eyes simmered with heat and anguish. Before I could protest even further, he caught my surprised lips in his. Groaning into my mouth, he physically stumbled toward me, as if the relief of our kiss had made his legs weak. I stifled a moan and wrapped my arms around his broad shoulders, feeling the soft hair at the nape of his neck. His breathing was harsh and ragged as he sucked my bottom lip into his mouth, savage and restless and hungry. Finally, 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 his hands, the ones that had been so gentle, teasing along my thigh in bed, were now grasping at my entire body. It was making me hot and needy, knowing his fingers were so close to all the places I needed them. And his taste, his mouth, like sweet whiskey and mint from the earth, it was more than overwhelming, all-consuming. This was nothing like his soft, chaste kiss in the gardens. That had been searching, careful, cautious. This was, he ran a single finger across my pointed nipple, producing a soft hiss from me that turned into a shudder as his finger worked its way down, brushing right up against my waistline, but no lower. More, please. I tugged at his shirt. I needed to feel his skin, to taste it. Breaking our kiss, he ripped the linen over his head in one swift motion. I ogled him shamelessly, the breath punching out of me. Even in the moonlight, his chiseled, tan skin glowed. You're beautiful, I murmured. I wasn't even ashamed. It was true.
You're one to talk.
He stared at me in reverence before his eyes turned wholly feral. Gripping my ass, he hoisted me up, capturing my mouth in a savage kiss and slamming us into the wall beside the bed, careful to cradle the back of my head in his hand. Immediately, I felt his length against my core, hard like solid rock, and pressing angrily through his pants. I clawed at his back, his neck, his jaw, fingers roaming with minds of their own. But still, I needed more. I wanted to be compressed between his body and the cool wallpaper behind me, pressed like one of the flowers in my books under his delicious weight. I was needy and aching,
grinding myself against him like a cat in heat. He released my lips and trailed a line of feather-soft kisses down the column of my throat, and my fingers tangled in his silky hair, eliciting a pleasant growl from him. The noise made my breasts pinch and ache, and I ground my hips into his impressive length, wrapping my legs around him even tighter. He slipped one strap of my nightdress down and bit at my shoulder.
"More," I begged.
"Don't tempt me," he purred against my collarbone, nibbling and biting until he reached my breast over the silken fabric. He pulled back and traced a reverent finger down the scar on my chest. "This is healing very quickly."
"That happens with me sometimes," I breathed,
but Kane was lost in his own thoughts. "I thought..." His voice cracked, and my heart stumbled over a beat. "I'd lost you. I couldn't eat, sleep, move." A sad smile tugged at his lips. "Shave." He considered me with something akin to awe. "I did not want to live in a world without you in it." I felt the energy in the room shift at his words. We had danced around the chemistry and emotion between us for so long that admitting our feelings felt unthinkable. His eyes shone like stars, and for a moment all I could hear was our ragged breathing. But he saved me the words that lodged in my throat by placing a single kiss along my new scar, so carefully I could have cried. His lips traced down my chest, along the silk of my nightdress, until his mouth circled my pointed nipple over the silky fabric. His teeth were sharp, yet gentle around the sensitive bud, and I mewled out a wild-sounding noise. "That's it," he said, grasping my other breast with his hand and softly massaging it. I tipped my head back, nearly going cross-eyed at the sensation, and bit down on my lip, trying not to make any more silly noises. The throb between my legs was teetering on pain. He brought my mouth back down to his and carried us to the bed, laying me down and climbing on top of me. He tried to slow our kisses, worship each angle of my jaw, my neck, but I kissed him with a fiercer desire than I had ever felt, needy and wanton and desperate, likely bruising his lips. Emboldened by my searing want, I looped a leg over his waist and rolled us until I was straddling him. He sighed into my mouth and wrapped two large hands around my waist. He was so big, his thumbs nearly touched under my belly button. One hand came up to cup my breast and rub my nipple lightly, and I whimpered on top of him. I felt a light, like a flickering flame. "You're not making it very easy for me to savor you, bird," he joked, voice husky and eyes wild. Ignoring him, I trailed light kisses down his naked chest, basking in his salty, sweet skin. He tasted like pure moonlight, dark and sensual and all too tempting. When I reached his waistband and my hands grasped for the laces of his pants, Kane groaned. The noise made my thighs clench, but his hands snapped to mine, stopping them. "Fine, no savoring." Before I could argue, he brought me back up to him with a wicked grin and tucked me into his chest, my back pressed flush against his front. He slid one hand under me, around my stomach, holding me to him. When his other hand slipped beneath the silky fabric and found the soft skin of my breast, we both arched farther toward each other. Kane swore and pressed his mouth to my neck. "You're even better than I ever could have thought. All those months thinking I'd never get to be with you, it was the worst torture I could have imagined. I want to bury my mouth in between your pretty thighs." His words were unraveling me. I was soaking wet and rocking against him rhythmically. I needed his hand lower. A positively filthy idea crossed my mind.
"You know," I managed to breathe, "you aren't the only one with indecent thoughts from that horseback ride together."
Kane stilled behind me before releasing a shaky exhale. His hand still held my breast under my nightdress, and I rocked myself against his length, making myself whimper with need. You are forbidden from not finishing that thought.
Humor played at my lips, and I moved against him again. He grunted, a brutal and depraved noise, and moved his hand to slide my nightdress up.
Do you remember when you barged in and I was in the tub?
He laughed lightly.
I could never forget. You were so cute wielding that candlestick.
He traced lazy circles on my hip while he licked and sucked at my neck.
Being that close to you, knowing your body was naked and glistening,
it was agony, he whispered, pulling the fabric of my dress all the way up to my stomach.
Well, I said, breathless, I had been touching myself before you barged in. I had actually been right about to come.
He snarled in satisfaction at my words and thrust his hips into my ass. I loved how powerful I felt in his arms.
Please, do not stop.
His voice was hardly more than a whisper. He pushed my legs apart and took his time tracing across my inner thighs, stilling when he felt the wetness that had pooled there.
Oh, fuck. So wet for me. What were you thinking of that day, my pretty bird?
You, I breathed.
That seemed to be enough to push him over the edge. He turned me to face him and kissed me roughly, his tongue exploring my mouth slow and hard. As if he didn't kiss me more deeply, he would drown, like I was oxygen. He finally traced his fingers lightly over the single spot I had been aching for, and stars clouded my vision. His light strokes were making me shudder and clench. He exhaled through our kiss, and it came out like a choke. But his fingers were unrelenting, teasing and massaging, playing me like an instrument and making me sing. I was so close, and he hadn't even... Finally, he let one finger slip inside me, and I cried out just a little as his thumb continued to circle. We both sighed at the sensation, and I kissed him harder, my hands